morning.
Hi, Joe.
How are you?
Pretty good.
Russell and I are here together. We're having breakfast together. We had a good talk last night. He is tied up, Mr. President, with about 125 of his main supporters. They're having a lunch for him here today at the hotel, and so he thinks it'd be unwise for him to break off and come away, and so I've had a long talk with him, filling him in pretty complete detail about my conversations with Martin over the last 2 or 3 months, where the situation stands. Of course, he's that old low-interest man anyway. He doesn't take very much persuading that if Martin jumps the traces, why, we've got to take a strong hand. Other than that, I found things in a very good temper here in New Orleans, and everybody seems to be fairly relaxed, and I don't feel the same, avid interest in aluminum and copper and matters of that sort out here that we naturally run into when you're beating around New York or Chicago. Russell's here. I'd like to put him on and say hello to you.
It's good. I thought your speech was good last night. Got awfully good coverage up here.
Well, I think Mr. Martin and the others, you know, the whole thing was just based on those last few paragraphs to give him a kind of a public message of where I stood and what I thought appropriate conduct would be. Didn't seem to be any reason for us not to be very clear, both publicly and privately, just the way I felt about it. And I think that message will get through. I don't know whether it'll do of any good or not, but I hope that he and his colleagues, both in Washington and in the regions, ought to be, and in the banking community, ought to be aware that we would consider this a pretty gross breach of teamwork.
Good.
Here's Russell. He wants to say hello to you.
Hey.
How are you, Mr. President?
Fairly good, Russell. I had a bad night last night. I had a little aching in my side and back, but I've been just doing fine. This week's first I've had in 10 days, and I guess it'll be over today. I wonder how you get along.
Oh, just fine. We're certainly interested. The fire couldn't be that much today. But this crowd down here.
Oh, I don't make it.
Some of Russell Long version of the President's Club that these business people you are organized. And a lot of these folks have never been particularly hot on me before, so I just got to be there for the luncheon that they've arranged.
Well, of course you got to, and there's not anything to do here anyway. This call is from you and not from me. Now, you bear that in mind, will you?
Yep.
And this is just between us. I don't want you to mention it, don't want you to use it to anybody. I just want you to have the information so you know how to use it. And if you ever repeat it, I'll say it's a big damn lie. Albert Gore came down to see me just in a rage before I left Washington several weeks ago. And had to see me right away on something very, very important. I guess this is 3 or 4 weeks. Before I came back this last time, well, I was up there at Princess Margaret. And he called about 9, 10 o'clock, and I told him, well, come right on in. And, well, we got together about 12. And he said that he had done all the studying and the precedents and everything, and that he had liked you, but he had thought last year that you went too far and that you needed checking and that you had to meet your master. And that he wanted me to know that he had never been a team man, but he was willing to go on my team and vote as I needed and support the administration all the way, provided I would accept him. And that he didn't want any job as leader, but as whip, but that if nobody else would do it, that he would be willing to do it. And I heard him out, and he rather bitter for about 30 minutes. I didn't say a word. When he got through, I said, of course I'd accept you as leader. I'd accept anybody the Senate elects. I said, I had about the same conversation with Russell Long. He called me and said that he'd like to be whipped, but he wouldn't want to do it if I didn't want him to, and if we couldn't work together. And I said, of course, I told him we would, and that I wouldn't have any voice in it. That's a matter for the Senate. But I think he ought to know that he did that, and I implied by what I said that he would be satisfactory. Now, he has exceeded my expectations. He did a better job than I thought he'd do, and I've always been partial to him, and he's been a pet. But he did a superior job. Well, he said that he didn't think I knew what had happened, and that it was that you had demonstrated a self-centeredness and arrogance that had distressed him greatly.
And the tail on him trying to whip your probe by the side of
it. So, well, you know, I know him, and you know him too, because you'd already told me about what he had said about some things, corruption and so forth. Well, anyway, he said, now, I'm going to have to go to the mat. Just want to put you on notice and warning. So, he said, there's no precedence. And I said, well, Albert, Mike Mansfield's a leader, and he was chairman of the Rules Committee and a leader at the same time. Well, I know, he said, that couldn't be. I said, hell, yes, he I know that. For a while, I was chairman of the Space Committee, and I think you'd probably find several. And anyway, I was majority leader.
There were three chairmen of the Appropriations Committee who were also majority leaders. As you say, I'm not the leader, I'm just the assistant to the
leader. That's what I told him. I told him that. Well, anyway, he said, well, that means that I'll have to take a re-look. I didn't know that. Said you. I thought you just had a special committee for a little while. I said, I had a special committee for a little while. And the permanent committee just as much work to do as finance when I was chairman of it. I was there every day holding hearings morning and afternoon. So he left very dejected. I intended to call you, but I thought it knocked him completely out of the box because he was so depressed, and I thought it'd just irritate you and worry you. I saw yesterday where Hart and McCarthy and some other liberal were raising hell, that they were out after your job, and that they'd have a lot of trouble because you had the power and you were willing to use it. And I thought, in the light of the conversation with Albert, that their interview must have been an outgrowth of some conversations he's been having. So I think you ought to know that, and I don't think I would use this for the president, because it gets him in it then, and then it damages him.
You shouldn't be dragging to that at all.
It damages it, but I let him have it with both barrels and gave him every reason and told him that, first of all, you'd already cleared it, and second, that there was ample precedence that I knew of two or three myself, and that was about it. So I thought I'd tell you I didn't want to kill
you. Well, Mr. President, I haven't even bothered to make a rundown with the fellows who voted, you know, with the other senators. I've talked to a couple of them, call me about one thing or another, but my impression is that the number of fellows who thought they had to vote for John Pastore, who would vote for me to be whipped, as it stands now. And I don't know of any fella who would get with me going in who would be against me now, so I'm not going to worry too
Did you see the statement yesterday?
No, I didn't see it. Put it by McCarthy and by
Hart.
By Hart.
And one other one. I've forgotten. Let's see who it would be. It wasn't McGovern or somebody, though, of that type. It was a liberal. And it's on liberal grounds, and that they didn't want to hog up all the assignments. Now, what I would, if I were running your show, I would just touch base with two or three, not for this purpose, not showing any concern. I would completely ignore it when the papers ask me. I just say that, as far as you know, every whip and every leader that's ever been elected, they continue until they're defeated. You never know on the Senate to change one, and if they you don't believe they would, and that you've been called to a duty and serve, and you've served, and that you won't have near as much work to do with finance this year as you had last year. And you doubt that you ever will have as much as Medicare and taxes and all the stuff you had last year. And that's the way I'd handle it. But I would talk to about three of my, Clint Anderson and old man Douglas. And I'm getting along with him a whole lot better. And I think one reason is because he supported you. I thought it was a good thing, and I've just named everybody he wants, and I do everything. I gave him a man on the home loan bank board.
Right.
And I, one of his good friends. So I'm going to do it. And I would talk to those two anyway, just on something else. I'd ask them what they think about this interest rate.
Yeah.
And just tell them that you have pretty good stuff, that they're getting ready to raise it. Housing's already down. And the cities and the counties and the states are trying to finance things. And if they feel that way, why don't they just kind of give out a little interview saying that interest rates gone up 72% on short-term stuff and 12% on long-term stuff since 61. And they've already broken the guideposts. And David Rockefeller said, he wrote me a letter, said everything was wonderful. It was the greatest administration in history, the most worthy objective, but we did need higher prices for aluminum and higher interest rates.
Job to hold those things down. And I want to help with the interest rate thing. Of course, I feel very strongly about that, Mr. President. I think we ought to do to try to keep these interest rates down, and I think that we on the Congress can't do anything unless we have the leadership from you.
Well, I'm doing everything I know how. I've met with Martin a half dozen times. I've had Fowler and all of them do it, but he's just taking the bits in his teeth. I haven't got control of that board. He's got control of it. And he always does have. And the two men I've appointed, both against raising interest rates, but they said them on the board. So the vote could be 5-2. I think it'll be 4-3 with him. And we are just pleading with him to wait till the budget's in. Now the budget's going to go through the roof. It's going to go through the ceiling. They're demanding thousands and thousands and so many thousands, I'm afraid to even mention it, out in Vietnam. They got to have them. We can't tell them. We won't send them. And we run $106 billion this year because of Vietnam. They have four big items of $500 million each. The payways, they gave them about $900 million, and I want to give them $200 million. It ran $600-700 million over military pay, and civilian pay the same way. The Veterans Administration, it ran over about $500 million. The CCC ran over $500 million. Space ran over $500 million. And interest rates ran over $500 million. I can't do anything with any one of those items. Whatever farms got, Congress passed a law, and they come in, Freeman's got to pay off. The space, they had the contracts and the appropriation, but they just went faster than anybody thought they could go. And we are proud of that. We're not right. On pay increases, and we committed to another this year, these damn employees, but you can't fuss about a guy getting $70 a month that got killed yesterday in Vietnam. That's military, civilian, goes along with it. So about four or five of it was Vietnam, and about a couple of it was these overruns on uncontrollables. But the fact is, we're going into this year spending $106.7 million. Now our revenue's up. Then we're going to come along here, and you're going to have the department's going to request 20. Half of that will be Vietnam, a little more than half. The other will be built-in requirements, like the elementary school bill. The formula is already there, and they're already making allocations to every school in the country. And that'll be $1.3 billion. Poverty, they've already got the men working, so they've got to continue. And that'll be $2.1 billion. Well, anyway, it adds up that they'll ask for about $20 billion.